Hi there, we're back for season two of One in a Billion, a podcast about Chinese millennials in America. This summer, we kick off with a special series, Give Me a Break. We want to break our silence and dive into certain topics that are touchy about race, ethnicity, identity, implicit bias, snap judgment. Here's a question for you.
Are you Chinese?
Are you Chinese?
Are you Chinese?
No, I'm not Chinese, but how many times have I been asked if I'm Chinese? I can't really keep track. I am mixed. I am Latin and white.
I am Chinese from Hong Kong.
I think what bothers me about the question, are you Chinese, is that I feel like people assume that Asians are all the same or very similar. I am Korean.
My mother is originally from China and my father is from Taiwan. I identify as American and I'm originally from the Bay Area in California. But when people ask me about my ethnic roots, I say Taiwanese.
I'm Chinese from Hong Kong, and I'm Mabel Chan. In this episode, we're talking about how we feel when people assume we're Chinese.
No, I am not Chinese. I'm someone who doesn't think that you have to belong to just one national identity or culture. I myself am Canadian and Korean. I don't like to put everybody in a box and say you're this or that because, at least for myself, I've never fit into that box.
I'm Chinese, but I don't like people asking me about that because I don't see why that matters. I don't want to be defined or only be defined by my foreignness or Chineseness.
What really bothers me is, you know, the question, you know, where are you from? For me, I'm from Southern California, and that's where I grew up for most of my childhood. Then people ask, you know, where are you really from? And I find that a little bit offensive because, you know, I am American.
And, you know, when you say you're American or whatever, people usually Caucasians get really mad when you don't tell them what race you are, and I don't know why.
I actually find myself feeling offended at times when I tell someone I'm Chinese, and I start to see the look in their eyes as they begin to tick off stereotypes in their mind. Oh, yep, she has dark straight hair, she has a low nose bridge, she's polite. And I wish they could actually understand how much more complex being Chinese means. So I wish I could share how vibrant the minorities are, how vast the geography of the country is, how developed the big cities feel. And more than that even, just how intellectual and curious and creative the people are.
If you approach someone for the first time and you say, are you Chinese? It shows that the question is not about what you're trying to learn about the other person, but rather to show what you know about this person, which is by looking at you, and it's really not about the person anymore. It's more about your knowledge and whether you can rightly identify someone to be Chinese or not Chinese.
That last voice is Eric Liao. Eric joined our team just 2 months ago as a blogger and production intern for One in a Billion. In fact, our episode today is inspired by a blog, Are You Chinese?, that he started to write. It's a question he's faced countless times, a question that makes him cringe every time. Eric looks Chinese and speaks Chinese. He is not and does not want to be perceived as a face of China. While his paternal grandmother comes from Dalian, the largest port in northern China, his parents were born in Taiwan. He identifies as Taiwanese American.
This is something I recently formulated, the idea that if someone asks me, are you Chinese, I should try to say, no, I am Taiwanese. When it's Mandarin, usually that is asked by a Chinese person from China.
你是不是中国人?
对,你是不是中国人? I want to let them know that, no, I am Taiwanese. Just to say that I think there's a distinct culture here, there's a distinct identity in Taiwan, and that it's important to voice it, as opposed to kind of just lump it together with a big nation that is also more prominent in the international stage. With an English question, usually it's asked by a non-Asian person, right? And that's where I think it's even, again, it's trying to lump people together, but it's even more blurry because I think there's less of an understanding of the intricacies of what it means to be Chinese.
Now, from your perspective, what does
Chinese mean? What do you think Chinese means? 中国人, 华人, 台湾人.
I mean, there's the political aspect of the word Chinese. There's the social aspect. There's cultural. There's genealogical, ethnic. And it's usually the ethnic part that you look Chinese. But in that moment, I don't see why I want to bring up my connection to the mainland of China through my grandmother. As I say, hi, I'm Eric. That doesn't make sense to me.
So what is the Taiwanese identity Eric fights so hard for? To understand that, we have to go back to his upbringing.
So I spent 5 years of my life in Taiwan, from the ages of 3 to 8. So I grew up in Taipei City, and so went to elementary school there for the first 2 years of elementary school. And then afterwards, my parents took me back to California, and I spent the rest of my childhood in San Jose. Yeah, so that was from the ages of 8 to the end of high school, basically.
But before he headed to San Jose, Eric spent a year in Milpitas, California. There were maybe 3 other kids with Asian American background at his school, and he didn't know how to speak English yet.
So I have to learn it from scratch, because I was a toddler when I was last in California. And so the school system was very different, and the whole setup of the classroom was very different. The roads were different, the food was different. So I think it was definitely a cultural shock.
Eric was young, adaptable, and a quick learner, but he still had bumps along the way.
There was a Cantonese student, and there was another Mandarin speaker. He was a Chinese American, and the teachers asked him to kind of help me figure things out and introduce me to the school and kind of help me out if I have any questions.
Right.
So I asked him a lot of questions, and I guess through his help and also just figuring things out on my own, I was able to slowly pick up words and phrases. But there were a lot of miscommunications. I remember there was this once I was just playing around with a few kids, and I was trying to use my fingers. So I put my fingers over my hand to pretend to be a bull. So you have, fingers sticking up. But for some reason at the time, I chose to use my 2 middle fingers.
Oh, no.
I had no understanding of what the middle fingers meant. And so the kid sitting across from me got offended, and I didn't know what I did. I got pulled over by the teacher, and then she asked me, did you point this, at this kid? And then I realized, oh, shoot, like that must have, that's a middle finger. And it just didn't click in my head.
You just didn't know.
Yeah, horse playing and just, yeah, I didn't mean it on purpose. I can remember many instances where, the language was really a big barrier. Trying to recite poetry, for example, was really tough. We had a competition in math to kind of recite the multiplication table. Or, we would be given, a question, and then 2 people would compete to see who can answer first. And the way I thought about it was, I knew the answer before any one of my competitors knew the answer, but I couldn't translate it in time to get the answer out. And so there was that kind of frustration.
Even though Eric has learned English pretty quickly, he still felt like an outsider till the end of high school.
So my parents in that first year opened a restaurant and then later opened a beauty salon. My brother and I, we spent a lot of time after school helping out. I never got to know any kids my age, and you never had any sleepovers or, get-togethers with friends after school. So in that way, I feel that there's a bit of a removal from the rest of the student body.
You didn't really join in that many after-school programs, activities.
I was encouraged to join extracurriculars, especially if they might help with academics or applying to college in the future. But if it's socializing with friends, making friends after school, that is kind of discouraged. There's a sense of guilt that I feel if I'm not helping my parents out in our mom and pop shop.
Since he didn't interact much with his peers, most of Eric's childhood was shaped by his father, who acted like a drill sergeant.
A lot of people like to say that my dad kind of raised me and my brother in a very militaristic setting.
What does that mean? What does that look like?
It just means that like he's an authority figure, and we have to obey him. And we are rewarded for obeying him. He sets our schedule. And if we do anything wrong, then he's the one to give us a punishment. So I guess in that sense, military-like training. There's an expectation that I become a somebody. My dad liked to say that a lot, like to become someone who is somewhat successful financially. They expected me to be a good boy, like someone who is very precocious, who knows how to talk to adults, who behaves. You know, if I don't behave nicely in front of other families, my dad would discipline me.
Spank you.
Spank me. Depends on how badly I behaved. One memory, when we were at a family friend's place, I was offered candy and I took it very freely. And then I got spanked afterwards. My dad would say that just, you know, I guess it made us look bad, made us look sloppy, or made us look spoiled.
Making sure the children looked good was very important to Eric's parents. There wasn't much room for anything else, much less exploring your Taiwanese identity. So how did this question, are you Chinese, come to be a problem for Eric?
I think I started to realize that that it's a complicated issue when we came to the U.S., when I started to watch the Chinese news channel with my dad and my mom. When I started to listen to my parents and family relatives discuss politics, Taiwanese politics and also Chinese politics. You know, party politics. I think that's when I realized that there's a question of, are you Chinese or Taiwanese?
That question is not only personal, it's deeply political and polemical within a family.
Yeah, so I was taught to be obedient, but not critical. As a kid, I never really thought about, how would I kind of think about it from my perspective? I remember once we were watching the Chinese news with my dad, and the news report was about how Asian American kids these days have, a lot of them have identity crises. Mm-hmm. And my dad heard about that and he scoffed and said, oh, you know, identity is not a problem if you just do well. You know, if I believe that if these kids do well in school, then there's no issue of identity. There's no crisis around your identity.
Why does he think that? What do you think he means by that?
I think it's the traditional mindset that if you're successful, then everything else will go well, right? If you have prestige, if you have money, if you're somebody, then there's no confusion about a lot of things. I think that's how he thinks about it. That's the kind of attitude that I was raised with. So I don't think I was very reflective about my perception of who I am. My parents taught me to be someone who is agreeable. So if it was the Chinese people asking me the question, then yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, we are all Chinese, right? And if whoever's asking me, you know, I would always answer in a yes form rather than negating and then trying to be argumentative.
So when exactly did Eric become more critical, more assertive of his choice of identity? How did he go from agreeable to, no, I'm Taiwanese?
I would say I became more aware of it in college. I was a government major in college, which meant that I took a lot of courses in government. And so I chose to focus on international relations and Sino-US relations. So that allowed me to kind of learn more about Taiwan and China's relationship. Yeah.
But more importantly, he started bonding with Taiwanese peers. Remember, in California, when he was growing up, he felt like a loner, an outsider.
I'm fortunate to be able to explore my Taiwanese identity because I met my girlfriend, who is Taiwanese as well. Mm-hmm. So she grew up in Taiwan. She was born in Boston, but then she, you know, spent her whole life in Taiwan, and then she came for grad school. She had a strong sense that she was Taiwanese, and mm-hmm. through her meeting her friends in Taiwan, so this is when I was like, you know, in my early 20s, right? So in the past few years, I got to know Taiwan through Taiwanese people who were my peers.
For the first time, he's learning about Taiwan and being Taiwanese from young Taiwanese his age, not from history books or in the classroom or on TV news.
And the sense I get is that there's not much of a confusion for them. They're Taiwanese. It's not that they're trying to say that they're not Chinese. It's just that was not part of their language. They are Taiwanese.
He listens to their stories and starts thinking more critically and fondly about his own cultural heritage and the distinct images of Taiwan as a city and as an island.
There are two Taiwans that really stand out in my head. It's one is the one in Taipei, where, like, you know, it's like a bustling city with a lot of people, a lot of traffic. You can smell the exhaust. You can smell, like, the pollution. There's, like, vendors on the side. There's a lot of street signs. And then the other one would be a Taiwan in a more rural area, which is central Taiwan, in Jiayi, which is where my mom's side of the family is from, where it's very, there's a lot of crops. In the summer, you can see, like, the wind would blow past vast fields of green leaves. There's not a lot of people. Those are the two images I have of Taiwan. As a Taiwanese, and a Taiwanese-American, a lot of what happened in China after World War II, after the Cultural Revolution, was not really relevant to the Taiwanese history, the Taiwanese experience. The Taiwanese experience is whatever is felt on the island. And so that was not really part of my experience or like my cultural experience. It's uncomfortable when I feel like whenever people talk to me about being Chinese, it's always because they want to say it's important to know your roots. Somehow they assume that I'm Chinese. Chinese culture is known for really being an ancient culture that has really strong family values, and that I'm the person to talk to. I'm the expert who knows about how to be rooted and make your kind of country and family proud.
What are certain aspects of Chinese culture that you don't identify with or even dislike that you can't wait to tell people? No, that's not Taiwanese.
If there's anything I don't want to be associated with Taiwan, I feel like those tend to be things that Chinese people would not want to be associated with China either. So, like, people eat dogs there.
They look at you too, like you said before, as a representative of China, the face of China, that you have to speak for the country, you have to speak for the culture, when all you want to do, Eric, is to be yourself.
Yeah, I've never been identified as Taiwanese because no one ever knows what Taiwanese is. So that's never a question.
But it's tricky because Eric is dancing a delicate balance and anticipating awkwardness.
Even now, because I want to be agreeable, but I also want to stand up for something. But when I respond and try to say I'm Taiwanese, there is a sense of awkwardness. What if they think Taiwan is Thailand? So people do that, right? So they say, oh yeah, I've been to Thailand, and very excited because they want to bond with you over that. But then they might say, I love Thai food.
Not to mention, he wants to prove his American identity.
I just know, I know that, like, I am very careful about the way I speak when I'm speaking English. No matter how, it doesn't matter that I grew up here. It doesn't matter that I know how to speak it. I went to college, I did pretty well. But I still feel, like, very self-conscious about the way I speak, about my accent. There's just always this insecurity where I'm afraid that people would think that I have a Chinese accent.
Because that would give excuse for people to ask you, are you Chinese? Is that why?
Maybe, but no, I guess it just means that I'm not American enough.
So what would make him feel American enough? A Californian accent.
Well, why does it matter that you sound Californian? You know, it's just the way I've been conditioned to think that that's the proper way to speak. My girlfriend mentioned, you know, recently, it's like, an accent, can be sexy. But for some reason, I just cannot embrace it. I just feel like I have to be American in that way. I grew up with a certain idea of how people might perceive me, and also because of the questions that people might ask me. Mm-hmm. I always feel more very relieved when people are able to make friends with me without really asking me about my background. Mm-hmm. It's just like it makes me feel as validated, as though they care about me as a person, that they want to learn more about me, that it's the way I talk, the things I say, the kind of my quirks and, I guess, characteristics that make them attracted to me, rather than me being a representative of a certain culture.
As I mentioned earlier, this episode is inspired by Eric's struggle with this question, are you Chinese? I realize that many of us who are minorities in America also have a hard time with handling these assumptions or bias behind this question. So what do you wish people knew about your cultural heritage?
I'm Chinese. Honestly, I'm afraid of stereotype. I want to let people know that there are a lot of well-educated Chinese people. They're polite, intelligent, and caring.
A misconception I'd like to address is that China is some kind of monolithic, homogenous, faceless entity that's looking to dominate the world and destroy the West, when in fact, there's so much cultural richness within China in terms of the dialects, the cuisines, the technological innovation, and so on. Also, that the perspective of the younger generation in China is much different than that of, let's say, a couple decades ago.
And both my parents struggled with their families and the fact that they were different races, and they made sure to never for a second did I doubt the love that they had for me. I grew up in a strong household, and I wish people knew that being mixed is beautiful and that it shouldn't matter what race you are.
We should embrace our diverse backgrounds and be proud of where we come from, where our family's from, where our ancestral history is from. But yeah, for me, I have a more loose definition, and I feel like I'm someone who is constantly recreating my own cultural identity.
Listening to Eric's story and so many other vibrant voices about race and identity brings me to my own thoughts about why this matters in America. It matters because this rising generation of young people embody the hopes and fears we all share, especially in our 20s. The hopes of being accepted and appreciated for what we aspire to become, and the fears of being judged and rejected on the basis of our looks and our accent. One in a Billion is a podcast about Chinese millennials in America, but it's also about all of us who live and work with them. As we plan more episodes for the rest of season 2, we're also thinking about hosting some live events, kind of like the moth-style storytelling forums. We want to meet and connect with you, our listeners, and have you share your stories after you listen to each episode like this one. Let us know if you want to join our team of volunteers, help us plan events, pitch a story. Just go to our new website, oneinabillionvoices.org, and find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. In our next episode, as Chinese in America, how freely can you speak? Who wants to silence you? And why? We want to give special thanks to Deanna Bach, Rafina Park, Suk Yong Cho, Qi Xin Shu, Liz Yang, Shako Liu, Maggie Shi, Leah Jarrett, and Lisa Ng for contributing their voices to this episode. One in a Billion is
Pallavi Katamasu,
Eric Liao,
Brian Latwinowicz,
Sarah Zhu.
It is an independent production of One in a Billion Productions, a nonprofit educational media group in Kendall Square, Cambridge, Massachusetts.